These are the same residents that took to the streets on February the 20th. The clampdown by security was so severe. A lot of people were detained. The numbers we got was up to 50,000 men in Tripoli were missing. And I know tonight and also last night, they broke into prisons and they set them free. So these are the very same residents that have lived here all their lives, doctors or engineers or students. These are the people that essentially rose up again last night. The difference this time is they armed themselves for the past 5 months. We had been hearing of several military officers who had secretly defected and were selling arms at a very high price, I would add, to a lot of those opponents to the regime. And there are many here in the capital. We just haven't seen them since February the 20th until now.
And what many people will be thinking is, what changed? Why did they suddenly get the nerve to come out? Was this timed with the rebel advance? Did it come from a signal from Benghazi or what?
I think it's very clear this was a well-coordinated uprising. What we saw yesterday was the National Transitional Council's head, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, coming out on rebel television station, giving a short speech. And as soon as it ended, they just kept repeating over and over again through the speakers and the mosques everywhere, God is great, God is great. And then we just heard people pour onto the streets and they were all chanting the same thing. And then after that, all we could hear was a lot of gunfire throughout the night and throughout the most part of the day. But I think the main element is that, frankly, I think a lot of residents here were fed up after 6 months. They have been waiting under severe circumstances. There's no fuel in this country. This is an oil-rich country. They've had to buy petrol and cooking gas off the black market. We had seen people crying in queues at banks who would not give them money because banks were running out of money. Although they were scared and there was a lot of secrecy behind their planning, they got around it.
We can hear what sounds like gunfire in the background. Is that celebratory gunfire or threatening gunfire?
From what I can tell at the moment is that what we're hearing is celebratory gunfire. There is an echo which tells us that it's being fired into the air rather than on people. Do you have time to give me 30 seconds to see what's going on?
Please do. Do be careful.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I just want to step outside for a second. Hello.
Hi there. What did you see? Can you tell us what's going on?
From what I can gather and what people are telling me, it's all celebratory gunfire, but I can also see tracer fire of anti-aircraft artillery in the air in the distance. But they're all talking about reports of Colonel Gaddafi being arrested. I cannot confirm this or independently verify this at the moment, but they say some Arabic news channels are currently reporting that Colonel Gaddafi has been arrested.
Give us an idea of how people on the street are actually getting their information. Is everyone tuned into the radio, watching television?
Yeah, most people are watching television, and they're very happy that for the past 24 hours they've had electricity non-stop, because due to the fuel shortages, there's been a lot of outage. That hasn't been the case in the past 24 to 48 hours, so they've all been constantly tuned into the television sets and watching the news. So someone hears something, they come out on the street and they tell their friends, well, this is what I saw, and they all celebrate all of a sudden.
Did you know when it was going to come?
Yes, I did know, because I had sources come to me and tell me rebels here have passed on the message throughout the districts that they are coming out in the next 48 hours. Obviously, all residents in Tripoli, they were very afraid that the battle for Tripoli would resemble what happened in the western town of Misrata, for example, where we saw months of heavy shelling and bombardment by Gaddafi's security forces. So people were very afraid of a similar scenario here. And they had been stocking up on food items for the past month or so, waiting for this battle here in the capital, the zero hour, as they call it, to begin. I can also tell you, as the latest update, the internet here has been switched off for the past 6 months. It's back on again. Earlier, we had heard reports that opposition fighters as well as residents had taken over one of the communications centres here. It seems as though they have switched back the internet.
And you used a phrase there, hour zero. Is that what it was called before it happened?
It's actually a phrase, I think, that they adopted from, ironically, Colonel Gaddafi himself when he said, "Dakka saat as-sifr," as he put it, like the 0 hour has arrived. And in Arabic, it just basically means the grand finale.
And with a grandstand view on that grand finale, that was Rana Jawad back on air for us after 6 months in Tripoli, one of the BBC's correspondents covering these momentous events. As you heard her explain there, we've had rather more gunfire going off in the programme than we used to, and Rana helpfully explained the difference between aggressive and celebratory gunfire. If there's an echo, it's being fired in the air and it should miss you.
BBC.
Clandestine abductions.
If you want him to disappear, send him to Cairo.
Secret interrogations.
You tell them you can use slapping. You're just opening Pandora's box.
The BBC reveals the inside story of the intelligence war waged against Al-Qaeda since 9/11. The Secret War on Terror. Online from the 30th of August at bbcworldservice.com.
The events that shaped the world as we know it by the people who experienced them firsthand. Living history, every weekday, in Witness.
This is the BBC in Beijing.
Kampala.
Reykjavik.
Delhi.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
It's 4 o'clock GMT. This is The World Today from the BBC World Service with Lawrence Pollard and Max Pearson. Today we bring you the sound of Sunday night in Tripoli. Rebel soldiers and civilians cheering and shooting in Green Square in the heart of the Libyan capital.
What I see here in the Tripoli is that people are happy. All are gathering, especially the youth, are gathering in this street, and they're happy. They're so happy with their arrival.
And with the arrival of the rebels, the question remains, is the struggle for Libya over, or is it just the beginning?
There's a very great danger of anarchy and gang-level warfare in Tripoli and other cities. It's by no means certain where legitimacy lies in the post-Gaddafi era.
That, plus where is Gaddafi now, on The World Today. First, the main world news.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. Libyan rebels have swept into the capital, Tripoli, to a rapturous welcome. Television pictures show jubilant crowds in Green Square, previously the scene of nightly pro-Gaddafi demonstrations. The rebels said they would restore the original name, Martyrs Square. Hussein Azawake was with the rebels as they entered Tripoli.
This morning at 8 o'clock, the freedom fighters from Zawiya starting their attacks. By this evening, we were in Tripoli. At maybe 9 o'clock, we were in the Green Square. It's a great moment for us. It's a beautiful day for us. It's a beautiful day to be free. We are so happy for this day, and we are really looking forward for a better future.
The Libyan government says 65,000 soldiers loyal to Colonel Gaddafi remain in Tripoli, but there was little sign of them as the rebels advanced. Residents poured onto the streets to greet the rebels, chanting and waving flags. This resident, Rana, said only gunfire she heard was in celebration.
Everyone just went out of their houses and they start celebrating. And it was easy because we didn't expect it to be this way. We thought they're going to be attacking us. I thought there will be dead bodies all over the country. But it was easy, thanks to Allah.
However, the rebel leader, Mustafa Abdel Jalil, warned there were still pockets of resistance. Matthew Price reports that a fierce battle is raging for control of the Tripoli Hotel, which the Libyan government uses as its media centre.
The area around the hotel is still firmly under government control. At a checkpoint outside, guards watch empty roads. The government spokesman here still insists that Tripoli will be a bloodbath if rebel forces take up positions in the city. He claims 65,000 trained and professional troops are in place to defend Tripoli. All day here, the families of government employees who've been living at the hotel have moved out. Their departure is surely a sign that they believe Colonel Gaddafi's grip on power, after four decades of ruling this country, is vanishing with unimaginable speed.
World leaders have renewed their calls for Colonel Gaddafi to stand down immediately. President Obama said Libya had reached the tipping point. In a statement from his holiday retreat in New England, he said Libya was slipping from the grasp of a tyrant and called on Colonel Gaddafi to relinquish power once and for all. A NATO spokeswoman said his government was crumbling and he should realise he can't win the war. The British government said an end was near for Colonel Gaddafi and called on him to go to avoid more suffering for his people. There's been substantial disruption to pro-Gaddafi television channels broadcasting from Libya. Libyan state television said it had been jammed by what it called a hostile media campaign. Its domestic and satellite feeds were down for several hours. The BBC's monitoring service said it had also lost reception of Al Libya TV. World News from the BBC. The Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, says his government is in no danger of falling, despite 5 months of street protests. In an interview with state television, he defended his response to the protests, saying the solution in Syria was a political one, but violence should be dealt with firmly by the security forces. He said steps were being taken to introduce a multi-party system. North Korea says it's seizing assets at a tourist site jointly operated with South Korea. It's given South Koreans 72 hours to leave the resort of Mount Komgang, which lies just inside North Korean territory. Lucy Williamson reports from Seoul.
The announcement came via the state news agency. North Korea, it said, was legally disposing of all South Korean assets at the resort, including real estate, equipment and vehicles, considering them abandoned. As of Monday morning, the statement said no materials or property could be taken from the south side of the resort and all personnel should leave within 72 hours. Both sides remain divided over how to deal with the shooting of a South Korean tourist near the resort 3 years ago, which led to the south suspending its activities there.
The US Vice President Joe Biden is due in Mongolia for a six-hour visit that stirred up controversy in the local press. Officially, Mr. Biden is to express support for Mongolia's transition to democracy since the collapse of the Soviet Union. But some Mongolian newspapers have reported that he'll support efforts by the United States and Japan to build a dump for spent nuclear fuel rods. The Mongolian government has denied any such plans. Lorry drivers in Australia have been protesting against government plans to introduce a carbon tax on the country's worst polluters. Hundreds of trucks circled the parliament in the capital, Canberra, but failed to cause gridlock. The Labour Prime Minister says the tax is the start of what she called a clean energy revolution. BBC News.
Time now is 6 minutes past four GMT, and this is a special edition of The World Today from the BBC World Service with Max Pearson and Lawrence Pollard.
That's the sound of Zero Hour arriving in Green Square in the heart of Tripoli. Rebel forces have been celebrating in one of the symbolic centres of Colonel Gaddafi's 42-year rule. Zero Hour was the code used by rebels for the operation, which appears to have taken over most of the Libyan capital from Gaddafi's control.
We'll be hearing from there in a moment, but many months ago, one of the first interviews we did on the situation in Libya was from Misrata. A resident told us the city was liberated, but just days later, it came under fierce attack from Gaddafi's forces as they hit back, and Misrata remained under bloody siege for months. Our correspondent Jonathan Head is in Misrata and joins us now. Clearly there's been coordination from east, from west and from the south as this assault on Tripoli has unfolded, and Misrata has been involved, Jonathan.
It has. They were sending fighters by boat, they've confirmed that, in an operation very early yesterday morning to support what, at that stage, they described as an uprising, a two-part uprising in Tripoli, which had been very carefully planned. They've also been involved in helping to get weapons in to people inside Tripoli who've been planning this. Now, you know, we don't know the details yet of how they did this, but certainly get by the extraordinary results they've got, you know, this was a very impressively coordinated operation with the rebel forces who are very close to Tripoli outside. Most of the forces who've been moving from Misrata towards Tripoli are still some way off because they've been blocked by heavy resistance some way out of Misrata. But when they encountered that, they got a boat absolutely packed with around 200 fighters to go first thing yesterday morning. I think a very important symbolic and morale-boosting step to go and join those who'd risen up overnight inside Tripoli. Now, I'm sure we'll hear stories of other elements of coordination But this is a stark contrast to the kinds of operations we've seen mounted by the opposition right up until now. They've always seemed a bit chaotic. They've often seemed uncoordinated. They've taken some very heavy losses. But this was an extremely effective operation, and it caught all of us by surprise at how quickly they were able to retake the capital.
And very briefly, Jonathan, from outside Tripoli, where you are, does this feel and look like a defining moment?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole of last night we were hearing the cheers, the car horns, celebratory gunfire. I think for Misrata, which has endured an incredibly painful siege, it sacrificed more than almost any other city, this is a very, very important moment. There will be people today desperate to move west towards the capital and to join in the celebrations there.
Jonathan Head speaking to us live from Misrata. Thank you.
Now let's go back to Tripoli, where there have been extraordinary scenes of enthusiasm and, as Jonathan mentioned, celebratory gunfire. Dasan is one of the local residents. He lives very close to Green Square, this central part of the old city. And not long ago, he told us what the scene was like.
It's just full of troops. All the rebels are there. A lot of citizens have come out of the streets and from their homes, and everybody just hugging and singing and chanting and waving the independence flag. Everybody's in a happy mood. They're shooting in the air, their guns and their anti-aircraft guns, and it's a rare experience. Very happy day today.
It's quite an extraordinary picture that you paint, but also, is there no sense of danger? I hear gunfire in the background. There must be Gaddafi troops somewhere in Tripoli, and yet you feel free to walk down to what is the centre of Tripoli.
Yes, it's practically clear of any snipers or any Gaddafi troops. I mean, I haven't seen any. True, a few hours ago, we were very suspicious of every car that passed by, especially if it was a civilian car with guns sticking out, but it turned out we were mistaken. A lot of them were just rebels roaming the streets looking for Gaddafi's troops. But they've all left. Early in the day, they were around, they were shooting, they were in the streets, they wouldn't let us go out, but all of a sudden they all disappeared.
Give us an idea of the symbolism of Green Square, the heart of Tripoli, but also in a sense, I guess, the heart of the Gaddafi regime.
It was the symbol for the heart of the Gaddafi regime for the past 6 months. But ever since yesterday, when the people revolted all over the place in Tripoli, it just became obvious that they could not keep it, or they just didn't have the will to keep it anymore. And people started getting closer to the square. The rebels came into the Omar Mukhtar Street, which is the main avenue that leads to the square. There was some gunfire. The rebels shot back, but those guys just melted in the night, and there's no evidence of them anywhere.
Surely you must have feared, I think many people feared, a battle for Tripoli, kind of street by street and block by block. That hasn't happened. That's got to be a relief for you.
We just thought that that's what's going to happen, especially when Musa came out and said that we have 65,000, we're going to continue fighting. We thought that this was going to be a long haul. But as usually, I'm happy that they were lying and it wasn't true, and it was over very quickly.
And there seems to be few reports of chaos as well. Is your neighbourhood, for example, I mean, I'm sure the police aren't there, but is there a sense of security or is there anarchy in the streets?
No security, but at the same time, there is no anarchy. What's been happening is a lot of the people are out in the streets, in the neighbourhoods, and what they've been doing is they've been blocking all the roads. No cars, no pedestrians could walk by until they were checked. So this gave us a lot of security, a sense of security.
But Dasan, you're in the middle of what I'm sure is an extraordinary and a historic moment that you're living through, and yet you sound so relaxed. Are you relaxed and relieved? How would you describe it?
I am relieved because it's taken such a long time. There's a lot of shooting everywhere, but I feel safe that I'm walking around now. There's a Revolutionary Guard building on the side here. That hasn't been touched, even though the old one was burned down. And it's nice. It's a nice feeling. You feel that there is a change happening. Even the people's attitudes have changed the past 24 hours.
How do you mean?
Well, everybody's so relaxed now that it's over.
What about the future? In the next few days, this is a great moment to be talking to you, but there are many, many practical questions that have to be addressed. Do you have confidence in the future?
You're asking me a question, something that I really can't predict, but what we've done so far. We've done so much. I think we can continue the same way. I mean, I'm glad they caught the sons. The father, they keep saying that he could have been caught. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. But if he isn't caught, then yes, I would suspect there would be some troubles. But if he's caught, then I don't think that we'd have any troubles at all.
And what do you want done to him?
Oh, justice. I want to see him in court for the rest of his life. I don't want to see him hanged. I just want to see him in court for all the crimes he's committed.
Dasan, who, as you heard, lives near Green Square and is relaxed and happy.
Well, in the run-up to the dramatic events of the past few hours, it was clear that NATO upped the rate of its airstrikes targeting Colonel Gaddafi's military infrastructure. Chris Parry is a retired Royal Navy Rear Admiral and a former Director General at the British Ministry of Defence. I asked him what role NATO has played in the final overrunning of Tripoli.
It's quite clear that NATO is holding the ring. It's been very difficult for Gaddafi and his troops to actually concentrate any armour or artillery anywhere. I think also major concentrations of logistics and other troops have been very difficult to put together against the rebels.
So has NATO won this battle?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the rebel fighters from the Western Mountains have really won this battle. NATO has certainly prevented the Gaddafi regime from concentrating any sort of fighting power in order to oppose them. Probably on the ground they've helped with intelligence and also advice. There may even be some French special forces there as well.
What turned the tide, so to speak? Because if you look back just a month, the situation looked horribly like a potential stalemate, and yet there has been this rush in recent days which seems to have resulted in an overwhelming victory.
I think possibly it was that the regime was weaker than everybody thought. Rebels have been steadily infiltrating into the suburbs of Tripoli and probably got a handle on what was really going on. It's fair to say that the blockade by NATO, both by air and sea, has probably had an effect. And once the route to Tunisia through Zawiya was cut, one of the major supply routes for Colonel Gaddafi and his troops was cut off.
Hasn't NATO, in effect, found itself in a somewhat invidious position? Because the mandate was to protect civilian lives, and yet, in effect, NATO has been fighting one side of a civil war.
There's no doubt that imperceptibly NATO moved from a position of protecting civilians around Benghazi into providing combat support for the rebels. They effectively intervened in a civil war, and they have been decisive in doing that.
How much of a dangerous precedent is that, though?
I think in future every intervention is going to be judged on its own merits, both politically and militarily. I think the real challenge will come now because in some ways this victory has come too quickly. And I don't think that the Transitional National Council is prepared for government on the scale on which it's going to have to act in future.
Well, indeed, and that places an onus of responsibility on the NATO as an organisation and NATO member nations to make sure that the Transitional National Council is able to put in place a degree of stability. Otherwise, it could be more blood potentially on NATO's hands.
I think there's a very great danger of anarchy and a certain amount of gang-level warfare in Tripoli and other cities. It's by no means certain where legitimacy lies in the post-Gaddafi era. And I should think that many people will be making their stakes for power, both in terms of tribal allegiance, but also in terms of personal ambition. I would hope that whoever takes charge in Libya will seek advice, assistance, and if necessary, some sort of muscle to help hold the country together. After all, there's quite a lot of infrastructure that has to be put back together. New institutions have to be formed. And we mustn't forget that after 40 years of Gaddafi's dictatorship, the sort of institutions that are needed to run a modern democracy or even a modern society just don't exist at the moment.
That's retired Royal Navy Rear Admiral Chris Parry.
Well, the NATO air operation, which has been directed against Gaddafi's military forces, began, of course, when it looked like Gaddafi might take Benghazi, the rebel capital in the east. NATO's mandate was to protect civilians, as you heard there. Some critics have said that that's been interpreted too much in the direction of outright military intervention, a bit of mission creep. As the Battle of Tripoli unfolded, I asked NATO's spokeswoman, Oana Lungescu, what impact the situation unfolding on the ground would have on further strikes.
we are continuously very careful and very precise in our operations, and the situation in Tripoli right now is extremely fluid, and it's very hard to use air power in street-to-street battles, if that indeed is what's currently happening in Tripoli. So what we are doing is, if Gaddafi forces continue to bring out tanks or heavy artillery and to move against civilians, then obviously we will continue to destroy or damage those, because our mandate is to protect civilians.
But that's extremely difficult to do in a build-up area, particularly as what we're hearing from rebels that we've spoken to on the ground. Many civilians in Tripoli are actually taking up arms along with the rebels against Gaddafi's forces. Now, that raises the question, of course, about who counts as a civilian. The whole point of your operation is civilian protection. How do you go about making that judgment in what's a very, very fluid situation?
That's clearly a judgment for our commanders, and we will fully trust them to do that.
Sure, but the commanders aren't on the ground, you take my point. That's surely an almost insurmountable problem.
That's been a problem from the start, because we've seen from the start that the Gaddafi regime has been using human shields. They've been constantly changing tactics and using mosques and hospitals and children's playgrounds as shields to continue to attack their own people. So clearly, this is an issue that we are constantly aware of, and it is indeed very hard to use air power in a situation such as this, and it is clearly the responsibility of everyone today to make sure that they protect civilians and that they bring this bloodshed to an end as soon as possible. And that is primarily the responsibility of Gaddafi and his regime, who are those who started attacking their people.
That's the spokeswoman for NATO, Oana Lungescu, speaking to us a little bit earlier as the battle for Tripoli was unfolding. More to come. Stay tuned. This is The World Today from the BBC World Service.
It's exactly 20 minutes past 4 GMT. The headlines today is basically a recap of what's happening in Tripoli. Libyan rebels have swept into the capital city to a rapturous welcome. Television pictures showed jubilant crowds in Green Square, previously the scene of nightly pro-Gaddafi demonstrations. The Libyan government says 65,000 soldiers loyal to Colonel Gaddafi remain in Tripoli, but there was little sign of them as the rebels advanced. The rebel leader, Mustafa Abdel Jalil, warned that there were still pockets of resistance. In the rebel stronghold of Benghazi in the east, large crowds were celebrating what they believed is the imminent fall of Colonel Gaddafi. The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has confirmed that Colonel Gaddafi's son and intended successor, Saif al-Islam, has been detained. Another son, Mohammed, told journalists that rebel fighters had surrounded his family home in Tripoli. He said he had been detained by the rebels and was being kept under house arrest. Well, winning control of Tripoli is only, I suppose, half the battle. There are still all sorts of challenges facing the rebels currently celebrating in the Libyan capital. For starters, what to do with Colonel Gaddafi, who's vowed to stay in the city until the end, quotes. As we speak, the rebels say that they control most of the city except for that Gaddafi compound. And longer term, there are issues of reconstruction and perhaps reconciliation to consider.
So let's throw our gaze forward. A little bit earlier, I spoke to Omar Turbi. He's based in the United States, but he is an advisor, regular advisor, to the opposition Libyan Transitional National Council. After the plan to take over Tripoli appears to have gone so well, I began to ask him what the TNC plans to do next.
I want to make sure that some of what Matthew Price had said has some truth to it. There's a tremendous shift of power from the Gaddafi regime to the Transitional National Council, and it's very, very hard to believe that the Gaddafi regime has fallen. Very clear indications are the surrender and the capture of Saif al-Islam, mm-hmm. the announcement by the International Court of Justice that they're going to get their hands on him soon, Gaddafi's son coming on Al Jazeera and speaking. I'm pretty confident that because of our experiences in other cities in Libya, we shouldn't be surprised that the Gaddafi regime has fallen and it's gone. And we might see some resistance here and there, but I think our challenges are huge and big. Challenges are transition. How do you have reconciliation between tribes? How do you make sure there's no looting taking place? How do you make sure that the technocrats that they have worked with the Gaddafi regime that are clean and good people could return to their jobs and create things and make things happen?
Well, this is an issue as well, isn't it? Because, of course, all of a sudden, all of Tripoli will be claiming that it never supported Colonel Gaddafi and was always on the side of the rebels. There are many, many people that that will apply to. But does the Transitional National Council have plans on how to do that with justice, how to dispense justice cleanly? Because, of course, the world is looking and Libya is looking on as well. What plans are there?
Well, that's a very important thing. You know, no one can actually claim that they're going to institute and install democracy tomorrow or next month. Hmm. I mean, nations that have had democracy for many, many, many years are still struggling to make sure that there's accountability, transparency, good civil society.
No, you're absolutely right. And bearing that in mind, and bearing in mind that you've had 42 years of dictatorship and therefore not a whisper of democracy, really, except in the peculiar Gaddafi form, how widespread do you think the thirst for democracy, which we're all talking about and you've just been talking about, actually is in Libya?
You know, the interesting thing is, because of the absence of democracy for so many years, you're absolutely right. There is a tremendous thirst for democracy. Benghazi alone, which only constitutes perhaps, you know, a little bit more than one-third the population of the country, only in 60 days, guess what? 400 civil society organizations sprung up. I mean, we're only just holding people from establishing political parties. And, you know, remember, Libya is right at the gates and doors of Europe. The distances are very close to the UK, to Rome, to all those places. And Libyans are a very civilized people. And I do foresee some good things happening. I might add that the time that has passed, 6 months, everybody had wished that the Gaddafi regime had fallen sooner, but it has actually, in some odd ways, worked in our favor.
No, sure, but nevertheless, you must accept that people, both people in Libya, but also people outside, will see that there has been severe brutality within the rebel ranks. I'm thinking of what is, in effect, an extrajudicial execution of one of the senior commanders there. This is the fog of war. You can't guarantee what's going to happen. Aren't you scared that it might go wrong?
Yes, it's possible. Everything's possible. And as a matter of fact, I must point out something very important here, that the capture of Saif al-Islam, as important as it is, I think we need to be very careful. The International Court of Justice must actually heed to the desires of the Libyan people. Perhaps it should actually demand that the Libyan people, the Transitional National Council, guarantee Saif's safety in order to be tried inside Libya.
Because that does become, it becomes like a sort of a test case, doesn't it? As indeed does what happens to the colonel himself.
Exactly. And I must add, it's very, very important to transfer him, to try to, you know, appease the world and say, here, Saif, submit him to the International Court of Justice. It is not going to be justice if he's going to sit there and have access to his huge lawyers and all of his money and be tried. And at the end of the day, he's not going to get justice. I mean, I'm one of those people that would like to maybe work something out with the International Court of Justice, perhaps find out an understanding of how he might be tried in a most favorable way that we're going to get justice served. Because if you hand him over to the Court of Justice, and we're not going to get justice there, not, you know, granted, we're not saying that there's not going to be justice there. There won't be justice in Libya quickly, because there is not a judicial system that we aspire to and hope for. But we have to really balance that. I think it was a mistake today by Mustafa Abdeljalil to have announced that it's okay for Gaddafi to leave the country. No, no, no. We can't have Gaddafi leave the country. If we can actually get our hands on him, we would like to try him. Make sure he's not, like, tried in 30 hours and executed, like Ceausescu in Romania, if you remember, years ago. We don't want that. We want the world to know his crimes. We want him to be tried in the absolutely most fair way. Then he is going to get his justice.
Omar Torbi, can I just get your take on something else? And it's how well, how the Gaddafi camp actually see the people who have taken control of Tripoli at the moment. The government spokesman Musa Ibrahim has been talking about the number of people killed in the past 24 hours or so, saying 1,300 people have been killed. And he's also described the rebels as tribal gangs intent on killing civilians who supported Colonel Gaddafi. Let's just listen to what he had to say.
NATO gives direct air cover to these armed gangs who have no political project, no real dream for Libya. What they want right now is vendetta and revenge. They are filled with hatred, supported by tribal conflict, supported by bitterness from the previous years. And all they want is to destroy this beautiful city, especially the tribes, the families, and the neighborhoods that are well known for supporting the leader of this country, Muammar Gaddafi.
You heard him there. No political project and a group out for looking for vendetta and revenge.
Let me tell you something about this fellow. He's a really excellent disinformation person. He puts a spin on everything. And pretty soon, I think this guy is going to collapse psychologically, quite frankly, because he's not telling the truth. And I'd like to see some truth in what he's saying. There's none. And the Transition National Council is made up of very honorable people. The whole entire nation has risen to change a tyrant regime. This guy should actually disappear.
Omar Tourby, advisor to the Libyan National Council.
BBC.
This is the World Today from the BBC World Service.
Today, Tripoli celebrates, but is the battle for Tripoli already over?
We're on the streets of the capital to hear about the challenges ahead.
There's a very great danger of anarchy and gang-level warfare in Tripoli and other cities. It's by no means certain where legitimacy lies in the post-Gaddafi era.
You're with Max Pearson and Lawrence Pollard. First, a summary of the world news.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. Libyan rebels have swept into the capital, Tripoli, to a rapturous welcome. Television pictures showed jubilant crowds in Green Square, previously the scene of nightly pro-Gaddafi demonstrations. The Libyan government says 65,000 soldiers loyal to Colonel Gaddafi remain in Tripoli, but there was little sign of them as the rebels advanced. The rebel leader, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, warned that there were still pockets of resistance. In the rebel stronghold of Benghazi, in the east, large crowds were celebrating what they believe is the imminent fall of Colonel Gaddafi. The prosecutor at the International Criminal Court has confirmed that Colonel Gaddafi's son and intended successor, Saif al-Islam, has been detained. Another son, Mohammed, told journalists that rebel fighters had surrounded his family home in Tripoli. He said he'd been detained by the rebels and was being kept under house arrest. World leaders have renewed their calls for Colonel Gaddafi to stand down immediately. President Obama said Libya had reached the tipping point. In a statement from his holiday retreat on Martha's Vineyard, he said Libya was slipping from the grasp of a tyrant and called on Colonel Gaddafi to relinquish power once and for all. Other news, North Korea says it's seizing assets at a tourist site jointly operated with South Korea. It's given South Koreans 72 hours to leave the resort, which lies just inside North Korea. Officials said they were legally disposing of South Korean assets, such as real estate, equipment and vehicles, considering them to be abandoned. The US Vice President Joe Biden is due in Mongolia for a six-hour visit that stirred up controversy in the local press. Officially, he's there to express support for Mongolia's transition to democracy since the collapse of the Soviet Union. But some Mongolian newspapers have reported he'll support efforts by the United States and Japan to build a dump for spent nuclear fuel rods. BBC News.
Welcome back to The World Today. This is the BBC World Service with Lawrence Pollard and Max Pearson.
When the end came, it came with bewildering speed. Anti-Gaddafi rebels advanced on Tripoli, meeting relatively little resistance, and joined forces with local residents who took to the streets in an outpouring of emotion. Colonel Gaddafi's exact whereabouts remain unclear at this time. Two of the leader's sons, though, have been arrested and are likely to be hauled before the International Criminal Court, certainly one of them, for the people after more than 40 years of Gaddafi and his Green Book template for running the country. The mystique has gone. The dam holding back their frustrations has been broken. Ibrahim Debashi is the deputy Libyan ambassador at the United Nations. That's to say, he's the man who defected from the Gaddafi regime and now represents the National Transitional Council, the rebels. I asked for his reaction to these events.
Well, I think this is a big day for the Libyan people, maybe for the whole people of the Eastern region, because it is the end of a dictatorship and the start of a new era of democracy. So as we see, the Libyan people are celebrating in the streets of Tripoli everywhere, and they are enjoying the day. We saw that three of the Gaddafi sons have been captured by the freedom fighters, and we are expecting Gaddafi himself to be captured in the next few hours.
It's not exactly the start of a new era of democracy, though, is it? Because the structures and institutions of a democratic society are not in place in Libya, and it's far from clear that the Transitional National Council has the required degree of authority to put them in place and keep the peace between people who may be seeking revenge.
We don't expect any revenge in Libya. This is the propaganda of the regime for the last 6 months. He's trying to say it is a civil war and it is a tribal war. But anyway, as we see it in the Western cities, which fall in the hands of the freedom fighters, it is calm. No one seeks revenge. And in fact, there is no resistance at all. So we don't expect anything to happen in the future. About the authority of the NTC, certainly the NTC will create an interim government as soon as possible, and it will take over, and it will be the authority to manage the Libyan territories in the next month. Then a national council will be elected to take over from the transitional national council, and the democratic process will start after that.
But do you concede that this is an extremely delicate moment? The principles of justice, the rule of law and representative democracy, they have to be adhered to, and there's nothing in place at the moment to ensure that they are.
No, it is not nothing in place. Our judicial system is there. Maybe it was not as effective as it should be. It needs some reform. I think the system will be working in a good way within 1 month. Certainly, we have in some sectors, we don't have good institutions. Almost we have no institutions. But I think in 3 or 4 sectors, in finance, in judicial system, in security system, we have them. They need a reform, and they need maybe a change of leadership, and it will be working.
But surely right now there's nothing in place to ensure that there will not be a settling of scores and an eruption of tribal rivalries and envies.
No, those who don't know Libya think there are problems within the tribes. That's right, we have. The tribes in Libya, they are known only in the eastern part of Libya. When you go to the most part of Libya, no one talks about the tribes. No one even cares from which tribe he is, and it has no effect on the political scene.
That's Ibrahim Debashi, Deputy Libyan Ambassador at the United Nations. He speaks on behalf of the National Transitional Council.
Well, let's go back again to Tripoli. Rana Jawad was one of the BBC correspondents we spoke to when the rebellion began back in February. Since then, she's been in Tripoli throughout those 6 months, but she's been unable to file reports for security reasons. We can talk to her now. We can get her to report. A little bit earlier, she told me that after some gunfire, her neighbourhood in Tripoli was seized by locals who had organised themselves along with the rebels.
These are the same residents that took to the streets on February the 20th. The clampdown by security was so severe. A lot of people were detained. The numbers we got was up to 50,000 men in Tripoli were missing. And I know tonight and also last night, they broke into prisons and they set them free. So these are the very same residents that have lived here all their lives, doctors or engineers or students. These are the people that essentially rose up again last night. The difference this time is they armed themselves for the past 5 months. We had been hearing of several military officers who had secretly defected and were selling arms at a very high price, I would add, to a lot of those opponents to the regime. And there are many here in the capital. We just haven't seen them since February the 20th until now.
And what many people will be thinking is, what changed? Why did they suddenly get the nerve to come out? Was this timed with the rebel advance? Did it come from a signal from Benghazi or what?
I think it's very clear this was a well-coordinated uprising. What we saw yesterday was the National Transitional Council's head, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, coming out on a rebel television station, giving a short speech. And as soon as it ended, they just kept repeating over and over again through the speakers in the mosques everywhere, God is great, God is great. And then we just heard people pour onto the streets and they were all chanting the same thing. And then after that, all we could hear was a lot of gunfire throughout the night and throughout the most part of the day. But I think the main element is that, frankly, I think a lot of residents here were fed up after 6 months. They have been waiting under severe circumstances. There's no fuel in this country. This is an oil-rich country. They've had to buy petrol and cooking gas off the black market. We had seen people crying in queues at banks who would not give them money because banks were running out of money. Although they were scared and there was a lot of secrecy behind their planning, they got around it.
We can hear what sounds like gunfire in the background. Is that celebratory gunfire or threatening gunfire?
From what I can tell at the moment is that what we're hearing is celebratory gunfire. There is an echo which tells us that it's being fired into the air rather than on people. Do you have time to give me 30 seconds to see what's going on?
Please do. Do be careful.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I just want to step outside for a second. Hello.
Hi there. What did you see? Can you tell us what's going on?
From what I can gather and what people are telling me, it's all celebratory gunfire, but I can also see tracer fire of anti-aircraft artillery in the air in the distance. But they're all talking about reports of Colonel Gaddafi being arrested. I cannot confirm this or independently verify this at the moment, but they say some Arabic news channels are currently reporting that Colonel Gaddafi has been arrested.
Give us an idea of how people on the street are actually getting their information. Is everyone tuned into the radio, watching television?
Yeah, most people are watching television, and they're very happy that for the past 24 hours they've had electricity non-stop, because due to the fuel shortages, there's been a lot of outage. That hasn't been the case in the past 24 to 48 hours, so they've all been constantly tuned into the television sets and watching the news. So someone hears something, they come out on the street and they tell their friends, well, this is what I saw, and they all celebrate all of a sudden.
Did you know when it was going to come?
Yes, I did know, because I had sources come to me and tell me rebels here have passed on the message throughout the districts that they are coming out in the next 48 hours. Obviously, all residents in Tripoli, they were very afraid that the battle for Tripoli would resemble what happened in the western town of Misrata, for example, where we saw months of heavy shelling and bombardment by Gaddafi's security forces. So people were very afraid of a similar scenario here. And they had been stocking up on food items for the past month or so, waiting for this battle here in the capital, the zero hour, as they call it, to begin. I can also tell you, as the latest update, the internet here has been switched off for the past 6 months. It's back on again. Earlier, we had heard reports that opposition fighters as well as residents had taken over one of the communications centres here. It seems as though they have switched back the internet.
And you used a phrase there, hour zero. Is that what it was called before it happened?
It's actually a phrase, I think, that they adopted from, ironically, Colonel Gaddafi himself, when he said, "Dakat sa'at as-sifr," as he put it, like the zero hour has arrived. And in Arabic, it just basically means the grand finale.
And she's watching it for us, Rana Jawad, one of the BBC correspondents in Tripoli. And as an example of how rumours get around, we should say she was mentioning there about the rumoured arrest of Muammar Gaddafi. We have heard nothing about that. He hasn't been arrested as far as we know, but his sons have. Saif al-Islam and Mohammed, two of his sons, are reported to be under arrest.
Of course, there have been reactions and responses coming from around the world. The end is near, a decisive moment. The regime is crumbling. Those are responses respectively from Britain, France, events and NATO to events in Tripoli. What about the United States? President Barack Obama has been getting regular updates about the situation in Libya. PJ Crowley is a former spokesman for the US State Department. Well, today's Julian Keane asked him how events in Libya are being viewed there.
Well, I think it's a remarkable scene, the same as we saw earlier this year in Egypt. But I think we have to be cautious and sober because notwithstanding the clear momentum that the rebels have, they've swept into Tripoli. I think Gaddafi and some of his supporters may well be able to hold out for a limited period of time, but clearly the die is cast. But there's an enormous amount of work to be done in Libya, and the TNC will have its hands full to demonstrate to the country as a whole that it can be the credible transitional group to lead Libya forward to a different kind of government and to new elections.
Indeed, you mentioned Egypt there. Egypt, but also Tunisia, they are examples which do show us the road to democracy can be pretty long, and you can't take anything for granted. It's not because an autocratic leader has been booted out. Hasn't quite yet happened in Libya, but it looks to be that way. It's not because that happens that everything changes overnight.
No, and I think that the other thing that bears remembering is that unlike, say, Tunisia, but particularly unlike Egypt, which had strong institutions, particularly the military, that it could fall back on to lead a smooth transition, you know, Libya is a different kind of country, tribal society. You know, Gaddafi obviously has survived for 40 years by making sure that there was not a competing power center to him. So that means that there's likely to be potentially a vacuum in terms of the capabilities of the TNC, other tribal leaders to come together, agree on a plan, and move forward. So this is going to be a great challenge. I think the parallels to Iraq bear remembering that after a period of jubilation, there was this chaos, and that led to public resentment and ultimately to an insurgency. So while we obviously can be encouraged by what has happened or what we're watching unfold right now, this still is a very tenuous situation.
There was some disquiet at the time in America's decision to hand over responsibility for military action in Libya to its NATO allies. And I wonder now how you reflect on that, especially in the light of what Republican Senator John McCain had to say, saying this conflict didn't have to last this long. U.S. air power could have shortened it dramatically. And the U.S., he says, led from behind.
I did not agree with Senator McCain that the brief period of time between the demonstrations in Libya and the decision for NATO to intervene had a significant effect. You know, there's been a back and forth in Libya over these last 6 months. I think NATO has played an essential role in not only keeping the rebel movement alive, giving it the kind of support that it has, and obviously that's now bearing fruit. And I think that this is a remarkable 6 months. But again, there's a great deal of work now to be done in a relatively short period of time where the TNC, presumably with some form of support from the national community, has to demonstrate to the Libyan people that it can be the right vehicle to move Libya forward.
That's PJ Crowley, former spokesman for the US State Department.
And let's recap for you on what's been happening in Libya in the past few hours. Jubilant crowds have welcomed the rebel forces into the heart of the capital, Tripoli. One resident told this program the mood was euphoric.
Well, what I see here in the Tripoli is that people are happy, or are gathering, especially the youth, are gathering in this street, and they're happy. They're so happy with their arrival.
There was little evidence of the 65,000 troops the Libyan government said remained loyal, and Colonel Gaddafi has made a direct appeal to towns around the capital to come to its defence before it was reduced to ruins.
I have to speak up because I'm afraid that if you let them, they will burn Tripoli. Tripoli will become ruins. They will destroy Tripoli. Tripoli will be left without water, electricity, no broadcast stations, without air conditioning, food or drink, or freedom, and you would live in fear. They will kill you and desecrate your corpses. I'm afraid that if you don't defeat them in Tadjoura, all of Tripoli might burn. These people don't care if Libya burns or not.
The words of Colonel Gaddafi, a rebel leader, for his part, warned that there were still pockets of resistance. Colonel Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, and intended successor, has been detained.
The government in Syria must be watching the events unfolding in Libya with great trepidation as President Bashar al-Assad has been cracking down hard on countrywide protests across Syria for the past 5 months. Speaking in a live interview with State TV, his first since he came to power 11 years ago, President Assad said that his security forces were making gains and reaffirmed his government's ability to deal with the protests.
We are dealing with it. We are getting results. We will not announce them today, but we are confident of the success. I can say that security situation now is better in the country.
Well, how will the speech go down with the Syrian people? Reem Alaf is Associate Fellow at the Middle East and North Africa programme at Chatham House.
I think most Syrians were not really expecting much following the experience they had with the speeches of the president over the last few months. But it goes without saying that the past few weeks, you know, the last 20 days in Ramadan have been particularly gruesome and violent. And many Syrians were hoping that precisely this would be the good time for him to reach out to the rest of the people and to reassure them on a number of issues. And he chose not to do that. He continued with the same broken record, really, about the supposed reforms that his government's going to be declaring over the coming weeks and months. He spoke more or less about the same armed gangs. He didn't offer anything new, neither to the Syrians who were supporting him, nor to the Syrians who are not supporting him.
And one other story, North Korea says it's seizing South Korea's assets at a jointly run tourist resort that has lain idle since a North Korean soldier shot dead a guest 3 years ago.
Just coming up to 10 minutes to 5 GMT. Now, if Libya gets a stable government in the coming days, and that's a pretty big if, the potential rewards for the country could be huge. Libya makes a lot from selling its oil and gas and had been viewed as a good spot for new construction projects and other business ventures. Well, that all came apart because of Colonel Gaddafi's apparent erratic behaviour in the last 3 years. Tim Jenkins is with our business team and he's with us now. Is it all roses for the Libyan economy?
Well, Libya is blessed with natural resources. It hasn't bought too much from abroad either, Max. So it's got cash to spend on development now, on reconstruction, if you like, as long as it gets a government with a mandate, with a clear plan. You've even got people like Jan Randolph I spoke to. He thinks it could be a big success, maybe. He's one of the few ratings agencies to assess Libya's credit worthiness, and that's IHS Global Insight.
Libya is a net creditor nation. It actually has more in foreign exchange and foreign assets than it has in debt. The broader balance sheet of Libya, it had been a big oil gas exporter with huge potential, underdeveloped potential, because foreign investment hadn't gone in precisely because of the political risk. But now we've got a new situation where we may have a change in government that would, you know, provide great hope for the country.
Jan Randolph, or hope for Libya itself then, Tim, but hope for the world's oil consumers too, potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. Libya accounts for about 3% of the world's oil supply, small but important. Italy, for example, gets a quarter of its oil from Libya, so any easing of supplies would be really good, Max.
Well, I'm guessing that foreign nations are going to be queuing up to help Libya after this in return for some handsome contracts for rebuilding the country. I mean, we've been here before, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. Shades of another scramble for Africa, rather. You know, will those NATO members who have been involved in the air campaign there want some payback? But mind you, I'm being told also that other nations will be in the queue. They'll want to have some sort of hand in investing in the oil and gas industry and maybe getting some reconstruction contracts.
Tim, many thanks.
Right, it's coming up to 10 minutes, no, 9 minutes to the hour. Now, it's one thing to bear in mind in this is the position of the United Nations. There is a special envoy to Libya, Abdul Ella al-Khatib. I spoke to him a little bit earlier as the operation was going on in Libya, and I asked what his reaction was to what was happening militarily on the ground.
We work very, very seriously to avoid the military confrontations in and around Tripoli. And we have been urging the government to accept a political process. And unfortunately, all our efforts did not convince the government to change its position. And we have suggested in the last few weeks a twofold parallel approach, one that aims at reaching an agreement to manage the transitional period through creating a mechanism for managing that transition and at the same time achieving a ceasefire. All our efforts, as I said, did not convince the government to accept that approach.
Would you give us an idea of what the rebel side and the government in waiting in Benghazi have told you about what their intentions are?
They have plans to have a smooth transition, and we hope that it will be a peaceful one, a smooth transition, one that avoids confrontations and any bloodshed, one that is based on tolerance, on national unity, and reconciliation, and involving all Libyans and building the future of Libya.
Do you believe that that will happen in the heat of battle?
Definitely, you know, when there is fighting, you can't predict what the result as far as human loss is concerned, but we definitely hope that all will act in the best interest of Libya and look for the future of building Libya in a democratic, progressive kind of system where all Libyans, as I said, will be able to participate in building the future.
But sadly, at the moment, there is nothing that the UN can do but sit at the sidelines and watch what happens in Tripoli.
We have been in touch with the leadership of the National Transitional Council, and we have placed the full support of the United Nations in helping the Libyan people manage this transition. And there is a very serious planning effort that has been going on for months now for the post-conflict in order to assist the Libyans manage the post-conflict period.
What will you be doing in the immediate post-conflict period, if we can think forward?
There is a special team that is led by a special advisor of the Secretary-General, Ian Martin, who is leading a team of representatives of all the agencies of the United Nations and other international organizations in order to plan for helping the Libyan people in their efforts during the post-conflict period. I'll make myself available. You know, my task was to try to engage the parties in a political process. And after that, the post-conflict team will be led by Mr. Martin. But as I said, in the immediate period ahead, I will make myself available. If the Libyan people feel that the UN can help politically in any manner, we will definitely be there to help them.
That's Abdul Ella Al-Khatib, the UN special envoy to Libya. Well, the operation has been described as rebel troops sweeping into the capital, but it appears that the operation actually involved Tripoli residents taking control of their own neighbourhoods. Let's hear how they did it from a resident who was too nervous to give his name, but he lives in the Dahra area of Tripoli. If you look on the map, it's next to the old city, just behind the harbour, absolutely in the centre of the capital.
I'm in the middle of the Dahra area. Only just a few minutes ago, two cars, they came and they start shooting us. Everybody is ready for anything.
Have you come in to Tripoli in the past few hours, or were you already in Tripoli?
I am in Tripoli since 7 months.
And we've heard that, I can hear gunfire in the background. Is that still going on?
Yes.
Is that near you?
Yes, people are happy now. All the people are outside in the street.
What we're hearing is people firing in the air in celebration.
Yes, some of them celebration, some of them which is a bit far. They are just fighting with the Gaddafi regime.
Can you give us an idea? We've heard from certain rebel fighters that they didn't meet as much resistance as they expected in Tripoli because the people of Tripoli joined them, took arms and turned on Gaddafi's forces. Is that the case? What was your experience?
Yes, it's true, because since morning we didn't have a fight with them, only just twice. Once, which is at about 11, and just something like 20 minutes ago, there is two cars that came in sight. One where they are carrying a heavy gun, and one just with the normal guns. But our people just, they killed the driver, and they run.
What is the situation on the streets at the moment? Obviously, it's a confused situation, but is there a sense of order? Are the rebel forces able to police the areas that they are now in charge of?
We have just secured our area and to not move anywhere. And until now, we didn't have an order from any one of our commerce to move further down, to the Green Square or any place else. We have to protect our area.
So you are looking after, you are armed and you are looking after your area and trying to secure it and the people there?
Yes. That's our order. That's what we have now.
Have many people died in the fighting in Tripoli, particularly civilians? Have there been civilian casualties?
Actually, in our area, not. We have some people who have just get urged. Like yesterday, someone has, they shoot him in one in his stomach and one in his legs. We just removed him to a clinic inside house, and he's fine. But we didn't have someone being killed in our area yet.
What will convince you that it's over? What is it that makes you think the rebels have won?
We will not move the area, only if our chamber troops move, or we found Mustafa Abdeljalil on the TV saying it's over, it's finished. Anything else, we will not do anything. We're just keeping our area because we don't know what the regime is thinking or what he's going to do. So we just want to secure our people here.
And what is the mood at the moment amongst you and your friends?
They are all of them, they are very, very happy. And really they start feeling and smell and the taste of freedom. We are really happy.
The taste of freedom. The residents of the central area of Daraa in Tripoli explaining how they took control of their city, or most of it. Momentous events greeted with gunfire in celebration. The sound of Sunday night on the world today.